This is Vatican Radio, and I am Lydia O'Kane. Counting in the Republic of Ireland's general election is underway following Friday's poll. An exit poll commissioned by the Irish Times newspaper suggests the coalition parties have fallen far short of an overall majority, but Fine Gael remains the largest party at 26%. Ireland's uneven recovery was the focus in the election, in which voters punished the government for years of austerity, despite warnings that political instability might damage a growing recovery. The early indications are that there was a turnout of about 66%. Father Sean Healy is director of Dublin-based think tank Social Justice Ireland. He spoke to me about the election and the country's economic stability.
There's been an interesting development in recent weeks. For a long time in the run-up towards the election, the general feeling across media was that the election would be won and lost on the issue of taxation, and that basically it was about keeping the economy in shape and reducing taxation. In actual fact, the principal characteristic maybe of the election has been a disagreement on this very issue, that some parties have basically argued for substantial reduction in taxation and keeping the recovery going, as they say themselves, and on the other side, the main opposition parties have argued that there needs to be focus on the services and on building a society that had decent services and that would also see Ireland's infrastructure improve dramatically. So in actual fact, there's been quite a change, because there was a debate last night between the main party leaders, and a lot of it on the ground has actually moved to how do you build a sort of a balanced future that will maybe have a certain amount of tax fairness, but also would have serious focus on improving the services that were damaged as a result of the bailout that Ireland had to go through, and also how would one might improve Ireland's infrastructure, which hasn't been great as a result, because Ireland's investment in infrastructure is actually very low by European standards and has been for several years.
So basically, in layman's terms, just regarding, you were talking about the whole tax structure, how does this affect really the man on the street?
Well, the basic argument is about where, if there is going to be tax changes, who should benefit? And the government, the main party has been suggesting that a tax that had been brought in, called the Universal Social Charge, that had been brought in to sort of try and balance the country as finances after the crash in 2008, that should be abolished completely. Now, the argument against it has been quite strongly made by the other parties, who basically say that if you do that, the main beneficiaries will be the wealthy, and the others are arguing you can reduce it a little bit for low to middle income people, but that you shouldn't eliminate it totally, because it provides a very substantial component of Ireland's total tax take, and if you eliminate it, you're going to have to find those taxes elsewhere. But secondly, that if you eliminate it, the main beneficiaries will be people with very high incomes, and I think that has actually got through to people as well. As a result, I think there's the sort of election outcome, which maybe a lot of people, particularly media commentators and so on, would have thought was pretty inevitable, has actually become much more problematic, in the sense that one isn't quite clear, it isn't clear at all what the result of the election would actually look like.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, this universal social charge, and for people who are not that familiar with it, it was brought in during the kind of financial crisis to really get more money in during that time when you had the failure of the banks, you had everything going on. But wasn't it the case at the time that the government said it was only a temporary measure and that it would go?
No, that's not true, actually. Neither party, the party that brought it in, which is now in opposition, nor the government itself. In fact, the current Minister for Finance made a comment a couple of years ago in the Parliament here saying that this was an essential part of the tax structure going forward. Now, one of the big things about this tax, in this particular universal social charge, that you don't read a great deal about, but one of the big things about it is that there's almost no way that you can escape it. In other words, that, you know, in the normal tax system, there's all sorts of ways that you can write off, you know, you get breaks for this, that and the other. But in actual fact, with the universal social charge, there's only one tax break allowed, nothing else. And all your income is at least in the beginning, it was all your income, but now there's a certain proportion below 10 grand or something of that nature, 10,000 euro that you don't pay anything on. But after that, you're paying this at different rates. The rates rise as your income rises. But there's no break on it. So in that context, it's a very interesting way that has been shown to be quite successful at bringing in income and not allowing at bringing in tax income in a very fair way, because there's no way that one can take a break, get a break from it and not pay it, particularly the better off. Now, despite all of that, there's another issue playing out as well, and that is the issue of who actually has taken the biggest hit or who has suffered most since the crash of 2008. And the outgoing government is in a space that is difficult enough, because they brought in five budgets over 5 years that they were in power, but in all five of them, the major benefits went to better off people. Now, they would argue that there was nothing they could do about it. Others would argue differently and say that there were things that they could have done about it and had fairer budgets. But I suppose, in a way, the surprise that a lot of the political people are having at the actual focus of the election would not surprise somebody like myself. This would not surprise a person like myself. The reason it wouldn't surprise a person like myself was that I would be very aware of poor to middle-income people who were very aware of the fact that they got the biggest cuts were against them. They paid very dramatically to rectify Ireland's balances, problematic balances, fiscal balances, that is, their budget and so on. And that they would also look at two things. On the one side, that they were paying the biggest amount, in the sense of the biggest proportion of the hits were being taken by poorer people, and an enormous amount of the services and depended on were actually being reduced or eroded or now had to be paid for, or if they were paid for before, the charges went up more than they were, like in healthcare and education and so on. But the other thing is that people are also very annoyed, and still, and I think this is an issue maybe for the wider European reality, people are very, very annoyed at the fact that the major banks and bondholders who basically generated and were the major cause of the crash, not just in Ireland, but in many other countries as well, that in the case of Ireland, Ireland had to pay them back 100%. So what we basically had, and people looking back on this now, is you had a very serious gambling process, if you like, by bankers and bondholders in the period 2006-7-8, and they took risks. The risks did not work out. They gambled, they lost, but they got all of their gambling money back. And Irish people to this day are extremely annoyed by that. And as a result, they basically now are facing into a situation and making the first choices, if you like. This is the first election after the recovery has kicked in. And one of the things they're seeing in it that is annoying them is that the recovery is not being felt by low to middle income people at all. People on higher incomes are doing very well over the recovery. People on low to middle incomes are not. And that is actually one of the issues at the core of this election, because the argument is going between the parties is focused on whether the current government being back in for another term would be the better way of, as they say, maintaining the recovery and ensuring everybody gets it, or the other parties, the main opposition parties, would be saying this government's had its opportunity and it didn't generate fair budgets over the 5 years, and it needs to do something different. Something different is needed, and they're not the people to do it. Let's put us in. That's their saying. The opposition parties are saying.
Just since the last election, you were talking about low to middle income families. Mm-hmm. I mean, are they the people that have suffered the most? I mean, who you were talking about, the richer bracket have been okay, kind of thing. So, looking at this since the last election, are we seeing that definitely the gap has widened?
The gap has widened dramatically, and that's part of the problem. There was an enormous amount of cuts in services, and there was increases in taxation. And interestingly enough, the government, over its five budgets, has insisted that there would be €2 in cuts in services and infrastructure expenditure for every €1 increase in taxation. So it was a 2-to-1 ratio in terms of €2 for cuts versus €1 tax increase. When they, 2 years ago then, when they turned the corner and they started to have money to actually spend, they reversed that ratio. And they gave €2 in tax cuts for every €1 of improved services. So again, if your income is high and you're basically paying, could be open to a lot of tax, on the first side, there was less tax taken than there were cuts. And then on the other side, when things reversed out, there was more tax returned. In other words, tax cuts compared to actual investment in services and education. The gap between poor and middle-income people and the rest of society has widened dramatically. Ireland's poverty rates are very high. Our child poverty rate is almost 1 in 5 children in Ireland live in poverty. And that number has been rising, and it has risen consistently since this government came to power. Likewise, the overall number of people in the population of Ireland is about 4.5 million. 1.25 million of that are experiencing deprivation as measured by the European Union, by Eurostat. By their not, this is not Social Justice Ireland or anything, our organization or anybody else measuring it. This is an objective measurement that is applied across all the countries of Europe and is done in each country by their own statistical agency. It's done in Ireland by the Central Statistics Office, these studies. And then they're sort of integrated and so on, published by Eurostat. And what we find there is that we have a very high deprivation rate and rising. We have a high poverty rate and rising, child poverty aside. Not alone that, for the first time ever, and this is, I mean, the first time ever since statistics were recorded, Ireland now has homelessness on a scale that we've never had before. And we have, for example, because of the fact that there has been no investment in social housing, the result is that people who are depending on social housing, those numbers have grown. Well, the population is growing anyway, but on top of that, as people's incomes went down, they're not able to keep to pay the rising rents that are demanded by landlords who own these houses that to rent. The reason that they can raise the rent is that there's better off people are doing well, and therefore they can rent them and pay more for them. So as the demand grows and the supply does not grow, the result is the price went up, and an awful lot of people can't afford ordinary basic rental accommodation. The result is they have become homeless. And what the government has been doing is putting these people up in hotels. So you get whole families in single rooms in hotels with no facilities of substance. So children and adults living in the same room in a hotel, and then having to cross the city to go to school and all sorts of things of this nature. And we have, for the first time, a constant growing of these numbers, and the worst month on record for people becoming homeless was last month. So those numbers are dramatic, and they're having a very bad impact, obviously, on the people that are in there, but that are experiencing it. But it's bad for the society generally, and not alone that, but I would say that any proposals on the table at the moment, in the sense of what government is going to do, is not on the scale required to actually reverse that out. So we're heading into a very, very difficult situation. So that's an example of what happens when you don't put the money you have into providing the infrastructure like social housing. And another type of problem of a different scale, people will say jobs are the solution to poverty, and if you can get jobs, then that is absolutely true. Poverty would be reduced if, as long as the jobs that they get are actually decent jobs that pay a decent wage. But if you look at modern systems in terms of business and so on, the one essential that a modern business must have to function at all is broadband. Access to decent broadband, good high-speed broadband, is essential. Yet there's big swathes of Ireland outside the main cities that has poor broadband. And like we've had five government ministers in a row over different governments talking about ensuring that broadband is accessible, or decent levels of broadband is accessible across all of Ireland. But in actual fact, again, that infrastructural investment hasn't been done. And that's the kind of requirement that you need if you're going to get the jobs out of the greater Dublin area and out of the big cities like Cork and Galway and Limerick and Waterford, if you want to get them outside of those, and not have most of your people flocking into your greater capital area, which is what's happening at the moment with the sort of more and more jobs within the Dublin area, and then you get a situation where the infrastructure in Dublin isn't able to hold up, isn't able to accommodate that. And you've got, like, so therefore there's quite a substantial range of issues that are required, and initiatives that are required, and there has been a lack of focus until now on the issue of providing decent services and decent infrastructure. There are five key things in the election that should be worked on together. You need a vibrant economy. You need decent services and infrastructure. You need just taxation. You need good governance, and you need sustainability across the board. And our organization has published an election briefing that sets out, we're not supporting any particular party and we're not criticizing any particular party. But what we're saying is basically these are the issues that that voters should be looking at, and looking at voting on the basis of what parties are able to bring the best combination to bear on those five priorities.
Do you see this as being a very close election? I mean, do you see it actually being kind of down to the wire, as it were? People kind of, is there a lot of voters, do you think, are undecided about who they actually want to vote for at the end of the day?
I think that's overstated. There's a certain amount of that, but I think more likely that there will be no clear results in the days following the election when the results are known. I don't think that the numbers at the moment, if they were to be followed through, if the polls are right, or remotely close to being right, then there won't be any, like, the current government will not be returned automatically. And they won't have enough seats to do it directly. They'll have to do some kind of an arrangement with some other party or parties or groupings. And there's going to be a lot of independents elected as well, who are not tied to any political party. Now, there's quite a number of those in the current parliament, but there'll be a substantial increase in the new one. Now, I think we could have a situation that will take a bit of time to actually work out, but that's not a big deal. I mean, if you look at Germany, for example, no party in Germany had an overall majority after the last general election, and the outgoing government didn't have enough seats to be re-elected, and it took them a while, but they negotiated this grand coalition between the two major parties. You could have something like that here, but you could have other variations on it too. It doesn't have to be the two big parties. There would be other possibilities, I think, thrown up by the election. But we might have to wait a little while before we actually get a government.
Well, on a final note, just, you were talking about the issues there. I mean, issues just regarding education, core issues, education, health. We've heard a lot about health, even in the news, people being left on trolleys in hospitals for a long length of time. Also, the issue of maybe pensioners, all that kind of thing. I mean, is that, would you say they're also core? Are people worried about that kind of thing as well?
They're the issues that make up the category that I described as decent services. When people are talking about cuts in services over recent years, they're talking about health cuts in health that resulted, for example, in increased waiting lists and increase for operations or for medical treatment. Also, increases in people on trolleys and accident emergency and so on, because the actual investment that Ireland had in healthcare actually was low. It's, for example, the investment last year was 42% down on what it was in 2008. That's the investment in capital investment in healthcare, for example. Okay, that's just one example. So you have to look across all of them. You look at education, you look at pensioners, you look at people, older people generally, you look at the services for children like childcare, and the provision of affordable childcare is an extraordinary mess in Ireland, in the sense that there are many women who want to take up a paid job or are in a paid job but have no access to childcare at a reasonable amount of money. So there's some very, very serious issues there. The basic idea is that, like, that I think people need to think about is that that Ireland's investment in all of these areas has been very low. If you were to think in terms of capital investment, Ireland's capital investment 3 years ago was the lowest as a percentage of GDP, gross domestic product, was the lowest of any country in the European Union. And the thing that was more frightening, which we were pointing out, this is Social Justice Ireland were pointing out at the time, was that if Ireland doubled it, the proportion of GDP it was investing in infrastructure, it would still be the lowest in the European Union. So that gives you some kind of idea of how bad it was. And we've a long way to go to come back from there. And I think what we have seen a quite serious dividing of the society. We have seen a very unfair, an unfair distribution of the hits that were imposed as a result of the bailout in 2010, and as a result, I think we have some very, very serious consequences of that. The infrastructure and the when I'm talking about infrastructure, I'm talking about social housing, I'm talking about rural broadband and so on, are the services in health, education, childcare, elder care, and so on. These are all below what is required. Most Irish people, I think, would believe that they should have Western European average levels of service and infrastructure. And the problem is that much of the time that issue, that kind of option has not been offered to them in the last 5 years. But they've also, as I said, been hamstrung by the decisions that were contained in the bailout. Now that that has worked its way through, there's a certain amount of recovery. Poor to middle-income people are not experiencing that recovery at all. It is interesting that the main government party, its slogan for the election was, when they started out, is keep the recovery going. And they have changed that now, 3 weeks later, after the 3 weeks after the campaign started. It's now keep the recovery going so that everybody will experience it. And the reason for that is that there was a majority, they were doing some polls were being done to show that the majority of voters claimed that they had not experienced anything of the recovery. So I think that's an interesting kind of situation for voters to find themselves in, but also for the political parties. And I think some of the political parties in particular were quite surprised by the reaction of people that they have been meeting since this election started.